is give sort of somewhat tutorial talk. It's sort of daunting because this is half an audience of SLE specialists and half audience people who don't know SLE much at all, especially physicists. What I want to do is talk about just some basic ideas that have sort of gone through the cracks a little bit in understanding things. I want to start with actually a very simple idea, and that's random walk and Brownian motion. How probabilists look at this. So just to warm up, we're going to take some sort of domain D, and we put down a fine lattice on domain D, start at point on the inside Z, let the random walk go until it hits the boundary. Or if we want to think about this in a more configurational way, just every random walk of n steps gets measured 4 to the minus n. Now the way this is set up, since the random walk stops when it ends the boundary, this is actually a probability measure for a given Z. And as the lattice spacing goes to 0, then we can actually get a process which is Brownian motion, which is a probability measure on paths starting at Z to get to the boundary. Now what happens when I make a slight change to this and I fix the boundary point? So I'm interested in the random walk starting at Z until it hits the boundary point, say W. Now we have to worry a little bit about exactly what I mean about down the lattice. Let's not worry about it. Just assume that we can get this thing well enough defined. Let's assume the boundary is smooth around W. So now we're talking at all the paths starting at Z until they hit W. Now the total mass of this measure is about the probability that a random walk starting at Z leaves at W, which looks like more or less 1 over n. Actually times a constant, which depends on Z, W, and the domain D. So now we want to go to the limit. So now if I want to take a limit of these measures, if I don't normalize, of course, the total mass goes to 0. So I put an extra factor n in there before normalizing it. And then I get a measure on paths starting at C, ending at W, and I'm going to write like this. And it actually has two parts. The important thing is that I've normalized by n, but I have not put that constant in there. So that constant sort of remains, and that constant is actually, I'm sort of putting it here, HDZW. And this final measure I'm writing as a probability measure, I'm going to use sharps for probability measures, UD sharp ZW times the total mass HDZW, and that's a finite measure. And this number here is what I'm going to call a partition function or a normalized partition function. Or some people like to say renormalized partition function, but it's only been normalized once. So it should be just a normalized partition function. So this is well understood. In this particular case, for these random walks, this constant is just what's called the Poisson kernel, or the normal derivative of the Green's function. I'm not really worried about the exact constant. So basically, say in the upper half plane, if I look at walks going from x plus I, y in the upper half plane to x tilde on the real line, there's the form of it. There's generally a pi in there, but I won't worry about the pi. And then the key thing is what happens under conformal transformations. So if I have the conformal transformation there, then the Poisson kernel is actually moved there's a derivative at the boundary f prime of W there, which is caused by what you see what happens in the limit. There's actually, in this particular case, nothing happens at C. So we think about this as having boundary scaling exponent 1, that's f prime of W to the 1 for a boundary, and interior scaling exponent 0. And then this probability measure, mu d sharp zw, is basically Brownian motion starting at z conditioned to leave d at w. And there's a number of ways to make sense out of this. I'm going to go through one way which we'll discuss this. So before I do that, I'll just combine this to say that if I look at the measure mu d zw, the combination, then it satisfies this scaling rule, which is the combination of those two scaling rules. And then termed conformally covariant is used. So that the probability measure is actually invariant, but the total mass of the measure needs a derivative one. And basically, what we're going to do is we want to describe this probability measure, and we want to describe it as Brownian motion with some sort of drift that pushes the path so it leaves D at W. And the way to describe it is by thinking about mu D sharp CW is a Brownian, as a normal Brownian motion weighted by this function, which is, we think of HB, BTW sort of as the probability that Brownian motion starting at BT leaves at W. That's not precisely correct when we think of it that way. Now, typical way the probabilist makes sense of this, well, we let tau be the first time the Brownian motion leaves the domain, and then we have a harmonic function, which is h of z prime is an interior point, and that's just hd of z prime. Think of the probability that Brownian motion z prime leaves the w. Actually, it's not exactly a probability. In fact, the way we define it, as you approach the boundary, it equals zero for w prime not equal to w, but blows up as w prime goes to infinity. And then what we want to do is consider m sub t, which is h of bt. And the probabilistic terminology is that this is a local martingale. If I write down Itô's formula, what this satisfies, it satisfies this differential equation. There's no plus dt. That's what the martingale term means. The local martingale has to do the technical fact that this actually is going to, this thing actually blows up, sort of, it blows up as you approach W, it goes to zero otherwise. That's an important technical condition I don't want to go into, but I'll just say that if we don't allow it to blow up, so if I say stop this when it gets too big, then in fact the stop thing actually is a martingale. Then, how do you describe the drift? Well, suppose I have a positive martingale satisfying this, and this is, so in this case, dmt is equal to mt times something, there's the j sub t there. It's just not dbt because I've got a two-dimensional thing here. Let me assume m0 is equal to 1. I can always normalize that later. Then whenever I have that, we can always define a new measure q by saying that the probability if v is an event that depends only on the path up to time t, then the probability of that event is given by expectation mt times indicator v. And what Gersonov says is that in this new measure, the v sub t obtains a drift. The way probabilists normally say it is that if I subtract the integral from 0 to t js ds, then I got a standard Brownian motion. Or the way that I like to think about it is that if in the new measure, dv to t acts like it has a drift plus a Brownian motion in the new measure. Probabilists have fairly easy ways of proving this, but they often don't explain what's going on to people. I'd rather give it just a very idea of the proof. Why is this true? What's happening here? Just a very simple calculation, not rigorous. So dmt is equal to mt jt dvt. So we're assuming this is true. So I'm doing a Brownian motion, but let me just approximate the Brownian motion by a random walk so that the increment of the Brownian motion is plus square root delta t with probability a half and minus square root delta t with probability a half. If that's true, then the increment of m, is, well, m is equal to plus mt jt square root delta t with probability a half minus mt jt square root delta t with probability a half. And then under the new measure, dbt, well, that gives you the probability, is now plus square root delta t with a slightly higher probability and minus square root delta t with a slightly lower probability. If you do the calculation, well, what's the expectation of the increment? What you actually get is jt delta t, i.e., jt is the drift that's been put onto the process. So the key thing is, so if dmt is equal to mt jt dbt, and you weight the paths by mt, you get a drift of j sub t. So in the particular case I did before, we're dealing now, dBt satisfied, in the new measure, dBt satisfies Laplacian, gradient hvdt over hvddt plus dwt. And basically, so the Brownian motion satisfying this particular condition, where this h, of course, remember, is the problem is this term here without the b. If I look at this process, it eventually hits w. I just say some care is needed because the path reaches w in finite time. You have to worry between martingales and local martingales. It's not particularly difficult in this case. And in fact, and in terms of terminology, mathematicians call it, this particular case was goes under the name Duke H transform as well, because this is a harmonic function H. However, there's really no reason why this function has to be harmonic. It has to be harmonic in order for MT to be a martingale, but suppose H was just smooth and satisfied this condition, and if I want to weight my function H, all I do is basically take MT and normalize out the ace of T. This is the equivalent of always normalizing to be to have probability of one at each step. So if I normalize like this, I can still call it weighting by H. And I just an example that you might choose is H of Z is the Poisson kernel to a power B. If B is not equal to one, that's not harmonic, it doesn't give you a martingale, local martingale.
Does the new thing, if you do any h that you want, do we know for sure that it's going to hit w? And how do we know that it doesn't hit w in zero time or infinite time?
All of those conditions, things you'd have to worry about. I think zero time is not a worry.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Infinite time and does it actually hit w might not be true for certain h's. That's right, yeah, right. Certain H's might not have that property. I mean, for instance, H equals 1.
Yeah, like, for example.
Yes. There probably is, actually. Right, okay, so, but, okay, the two things here, I mean, there's a...
By thinking of an H, is there an equivalent harmonic function?
No, I do not think that. I mean, basically, it's, your derivative is Laplacian H, is a gradient H over H. So, any H that you can, anything you can write like that, I think you can do this. You can think of this as either being the h or the function or the drift. So, oh yeah, and I just want to say in this particular case, these particular measures also, one of the reasons to not normalize this measure to be a probability measure is you have something called the restriction property. So in this particular case, suppose I have a domain D and I make my domain smaller, and then I look at, well, what's the measure mu D prime from Z to W? It's exactly the measure mu DZW restricted to those paths that stay in D prime. And just to be fancy, I can write the same thing in terms of radon nicodym derivatives. If I've got any curve gamma, I take the radon-nicodym derivative of mu d prime over mu d here. That's basically just equal to 1 or 0, depending on whether this curve is in or not. Okay, my reason for doing that is to then just say how we do the same thing for SLE. So let me give just a quick definition of chordal SLE in the upper half plane. And I apologize for those who haven't seen this. This probably will not be enough of an introduction. But for the purposes of today's talk, we can think mainly the case capital S to the regular 4. So let's just think of the case of a simple curve. So gamma is a simple curve in the upper half plane. SLE is a way of describing a measure on these curves. But basically, what we do is we're going to describe the conditional distribution of the red part given the green part. If we go up to the green part, so suppose we have gamma, there's gamma t. Given the green part, we take a conformal transformation that moves the upper half plane minus the green part to the upper half plane. That's what g sub t is here. And in order to describe the distribution of the red on the left, we will describe the distribution on the red on the right. Now, if we choose g sub t correctly, in other words, there's some parameters we have to check, there's some flexibility in the Radon-Nikodym derivative, I'm sorry, in the Riemann map of the upper half plane, the slip plane of the upper half plane, Riemann map there, there's some choices we have to make there, and there's also some choices of how we parameterize the curve gamma t. But if I make the choices correctly, then I can choose g sub t so that at infinity it looks like z plus a plus zero, that's actually my choice of my Riemann map, plus at over z, that's my choice of parameterization of gamma, plus some order like that. And if I do that, then it's just a deterministic fact that g sub t satisfies the following equation. Partial derivative is a over gt minus ut, where ut is the image of gamma t. So that's just the Lerner equation, and then SLE is what's obtained if you let u sub t be a Brownian motion, a standard Brownian motion. And generally, it's just convenient to make u sub t minus a standard Brownian motion because there's a lot of minus signs that appear later. This is not the usual parameterization for SLE. The usual parameterization for SLE puts a 2 here and puts a Brownian motion of variance kappa here. But I find it easier to do it this way. But this number A is 2 over kappa. Kappa is the normal parameterization used. Now, when Oda and Schramm defined this, he was trying to find something that was going to be conformally invariant. So one of his definitions implied that if I took a simply connected domain and two boundary points C and W, SLE in this smaller domain should be the conformal image of SLE from there. So the definition of SLE from C to W is that. What I want to sort of say today is what he was really defining there was not what I think should be the SLE measure, but what should be the equivalent of the probability measure of the mu d z's w's shot. So the probability measure for SLE in a simply connected domain is conformally invariant. But what I want to say is that, in fact, we should think of SLE as actually being a finite measure that's not a probability measure with a certain mass and then a probability measure. And I want to show you how to get this partition function. Let me start with one particular case, which is where my domain is just the upper half plane minus a piece. Suppose I take the upper half plane minus some part d, so that it's still simply connected. And I'm also going to assume that the part that I'm cutting out is not near zero or infinity. So what I'm cutting out is bounded and is a positive distance away from zero. Then if I do this, then there's a well-defined map B sub D that takes the upper half plane minus the green, and it takes D to the upper half plane. Normalize it so it sends infinity to infinity and has derivative 1 at infinity. And then what I want to claim is that the right partition function for this, the HD you should put in, is actually should be phi prime D of 0 to the D power.
You said Brownian excursion.
For Brownian excursion, the problem, this VD of, okay, this V prime, sorry, whoops. By the way, okay, that's a typo, there should be a prime there. Sure, VB prime. VB prime, without the B, is the probability that a Brownian excursion avoids D. I should have said that, yeah. But I'm saying for SLE, the number we should put is VB prime of 0 to the B, where B is this particular exponent that depends on the value you count. So let me show you what's happening here. So here I have a standard kind of diagram that I draw often. It's a very small version of it here. What I want to do is do a path in D. So at the upper left, I have a path in D. I'm just splitting it into at some time. So, but the red and purple make a path. That's a path in D. And now what I can do is, well, I can, by phi sub d, I can map that thing over here. But equally well, that's the red part is up to time t. I can go down by g sub t and map it here, in which case the domain d gets mapped to a domain d sub t. Then again, I can map this by phi sub t, which is phi sub d sub t, and this picture commutes. And now, what I want to do is say, well, what is SLE in this domain here? Well, suppose I've done my SLE for a while. I bring it down. Now here's where my SLE is starting. There's my my d sub t has changed. So I have a new value of the partition function here, which is h at d sub t, ut to infinity. In this case, it would just be vt prime of ut to the b. I can write down what differential equation k sub t satisfies, sde, and it's dkt is equal to kt times something. In this particular case, there is a dt term and a dvt term. And the dt term is given by that there, which you haven't seen. I just say A is this 2 over kappa. That's just the way I normalize things. This S is just a Schwarzian derivative of the function phi sub S. And this C here is the central charge, which is the same central charge in formal field theory. And in terms of kappa, it's given by that. And 12 is 12. This formula comes from doing it. Eno's formula. Okay, take vt prime of ut to the b and do Eno's formula carefully. Yeah, that's all I can do. So it's just a calculation. And in the calculation, you've been careful to choose the right b to go with the right cap. So the B that you've chosen matches the cap over A by that form. And so, okay, so that's just, so that's just a calculation. If we go like we did for Kirsanov, then what I'm going to do is, well, K sub T is not a martingale. I want to make it a martingale, so what I do is I sort of normalize the integral of a sub t. So m sub t is this thing, just to get the dt term gone, so that dmt is equal to b log t. By the way, all these derivatives are x derivatives. And all primes will be x or z derivatives, but not time derivatives. And so, if I wait by this martingale, Kirsanov now tells me what the derivative would have to be, and it's just given by that. We're done, so, and I just, B and U are different by a minus sign, which is just how things change. So basically, if I look at the probability measure corresponding to this. It's given by this formula when I wake. Now, what does this have to do with Schramm's original definition? Well, if I weight the SLE path by this VT prime UT to the B, then the probability measure can be obtained basically as just the solution of the original, that's another typo. Those should just be GTs, not GT primes. Sorry. That should just be DT GT equals A GT C minus UT. The probability measure is the solution to this, except that instead of having UT just be a standard Brownian motion, we put a drift into the Brownian motion, and this drift depends on what happened so far. In order to calculate the drift, we need to know what D sub T looks like. Now, in the important theorem, the reason why this makes sense as a definition is that you can actually check that this definition actually agrees with Schramm's original definition of mu sharp, which is just the conformal image under SLE from the upper half. So it's two ways of getting the same thing. Let me restrict the case for capital S equal to 4. For those who don't know SLE, capital S equal to 4 is a particular phase where the measure on the red path, the SLE path, lies on simple paths, non-self-intersecting paths. What I'm going to say here isn't really valid in the kappa bigger than 4 case. So if kappa is less than or equal to 4, then this m sub t is actually a martingale, and we can do this for all t. And in fact, there's another way we can look at. We can look at the measure on this path. What we're going to do is look at this measure, the measure in D, in terms of the Radon-Nikodym derivative of it with respect to H. And what happens is, well, suppose I've got a curve gamma here. What's the measure of this in the new, considered as a measure in D? Well, compared to H, it's basically given by, well, I just split up this that correction term in two parts. I've written as e to the minus c over 2 lambda gamma d, where lambda gamma d is this. And I won't go through the definition today, but this can actually be interpreted as the measure of the set of some sort of Brownian loops that hit both the green and the red. So if I want to know what the, sort of in some sense, how does the measure of this path change as I go from h to d? What I do is I look at e to the minus c over 2 times this quantity. And in fact, this Radon-Nikodym derivative is actually a conformal invariant. So if I took the upper half plane and looked at d and I mapped it all someplace else, if I took at the ratio of these things, this quantity would actually be the same.
Purple path is a single loop.
That's just a single loop, but there's actually, there's the spreading loop measure is a measure only.
But so is it the measure of overlapping loops that possibly?
A single loop. But it's a single Brownian loop, so that it's not. So that's why it's drawn like that. It's the measure, total measure. So this leads. Having said all of this, I want to define mu d z w for simply connected d. So this should be, in some sense, the definition of SLE, I claim, should be mu d z is equal to h d z w mu d sharp z w, where the h d z w transforms by the boundary scaling exponent, which is f prime of z to the b, f prime of w to the b. That tells you how you get it. In particular, if I look at the upper half plane with two points on the real line, this is just the Poisson kernel raised to the b power, the boundary Poisson kernel raised to the b power. While I'm here, one other case, important case here is c equals 0 which corresponds to kappa equals 8/3 for kappa less than or equal to 4, is the case where we actually have the restriction property. The restriction property is that this is equal to 1. This should say, this should be 1 times the indicator that gamma is in D. If gamma is outside D, it's 0. So if C is equal to 0, this is equal to 1 if gamma is in D and 0 outside. And that's the restriction property. Okay. So I want to do some other examples of partition functions. Well, how about radial SLE? Well, radial SLE is a measure on paths starting at a boundary point, ending at an interior point. Generally, you can give it as a probability measure. I'm going to define this in the upper half plane in the following way. What I want to do is start with chordal SLE going from W to infinity, and then weight the paths by a certain function, which pushes it to go to C. And in this case, the natural function to do is just the Poisson kernel in the upper half plane raised to the B power. So if I take SLE in the upper half plane, chordal SLE in the upper half plane, and I weight the paths by this, I get exactly the distribution of radial SLE. I actually have to be a little careful here. That's what happens for kappa less than or equal to 4. If kappa is less than or equal to 4, and I weight by this, the path goes, and eventually it hits C. If kappa is bigger than 4, say if kappa is between 4 and 8, then I start here. What happens is it doesn't hit the path. It actually hits here first. And once it hits here, infinity and C are different directions. So it actually, this is really only up to the point where This is true up to the point where C is disconnected from infinity. Actually, and if kappa, if you're in the space filling case where kappa is bigger than or equal to 4, it actually gets all the way to infinity before it gets to Z. But little technical details. You may ask, how do I know that's radial SLE? For those who know what radial SLE is, the answer here. Very simple. If I put that partition function in, Kirsanov tells me what the drift is, and I can check that's exactly the drift you would get from radial SLE. I can just check. I'm not going to go through that. Here's another example. Here we're talking about paths going from, we're thinking going from x tilde to x. In reality, we start with paths going from x tilde to infinity. And then the weight that I'm going to put on is ut, and I didn't correct all these things. That x there should be gt of x. And the weight at any particular time should be ut of x, ut minus gt of x, the difference here raised to the lambda power. So the partition function is x tilde minus x to the lambda, but I do this. And if I do this, we just check that the drift you get is lambda ut minus gt of x. And it's just a drift like that. And these processes have appeared before. These are basically the kappa rho, SLE kappa rho processes. Personal opinion, I think this, even though I was one of the co-authors of the original paper that gave this terminology, I think this is bad terminology with the rho, because the drift of the rho depends very much on the parameterization of kappa. And this is perhaps not the best use of the term. I actually prefer to think of these in terms of what exponents are weighting by. That's just a relationship. This is SLE kappa rho. That's the parameterization of curve. So rho, in some sense, is a function of the fact that you parameterized it so the Brownian motion goes to kappa. And I don't think that's the best parameterization. If you want a definition, SLE kappa rho is the the process that is the solution to Lerner equation satisfying that. So it's a particular. So okay, yeah. Let me go with that question a little bit. Okay. A lot of what we're doing here is defining different versions of SLE in terms of chordal SLE. And the way that most people initially went to do about that was by defining the drift that goes with it. I'm just trying to do the same thing, but defining in terms of the partition functions, the natural partition functions for the drift. So SLE rho was a particular drift that was given. And where the rho, so, and it's this particular, so if you satisfy this, I've got it parameterized like the usual SLE. And I chose that number to be rho, that's SLE kappa rho. It's an SLE with a certain drift. That's true for general lambda, but there's one particular value of lambda that's particularly nice, and that's lambda equals minus 2b. So now, in this case, we actually have the partition function for SLE in the upper half plane from x to x tilde, or x tilde to x. And in this case, when weighted ut satisfies something like that, 2b, and I just want to, that turns out to be rho equals kappa minus 6. And that, you might hear, someone might talk about SLE kappa minus 6. And if I have my arithmetic right, this is the SLE having to do with it's basically SLE from x tilde to x written in terms of SLE from x tilde to infinity. This particular thing, there's a certain commutation relationship symmetry here that does not exist in general gears. You may want to say, well, here I did a process that goes from x tilde to x. I might say, well, I'm going to go from x to x tilde instead. And in general, these things don't commute. In this particular case, you do get commutation. Let me do another case. Green's function for SLE and H. Well, first let me define the Green's function. The Green's function for SLE and H is basically, in some sense, the probability that SLE from 0 to infinity goes through a particular point. To be more precisely, if I have a point C, which I'm writing as y times x plus I, and I ask what's the probability that an SLE path gets within distance epsilon of C, then for capital less than 8, that decays like epsilon to the 2 minus D. This D is the fractal dimension of the path. Times a certain constant. Well, that's an absolute constant depending on kappa. And then this function G of C is that function up there. Roughly speaking, it's the probability that SLE goes through there. So now if I take SLE kappa in the upper half plane going from 0 to infinity, but I weight it by this Green's function, then what I get is more or less, what I get is SLE conditioned to go through Z. And the path that I get is really sort of the first half of the path there. Now I call this two-sided radial SLE because you should also think of this as being, look at Z, focus at Z, and ask, if I take this interior point C, what's the probability measure of pairs of paths, one going to 0 and one going to infinity, with this non-self-intersecting condition? And that's the same issue is also called, so it's two-sided radial. Again, this picture is nicest for kappa less than or equal to 4. For kappa between 4 and 8, this still makes sense, except that this path, again, I apologize. For kappa less than 8, in this case, in fact, you actually do hit C before it separated, because you have to, the equation will show that you do so. So this is that. For kappa bigger than or equal to 8, this no longer makes sense. Another example is non-intersecting SLEs. Let me do this only for capital less than or equal to 4. Suppose I have a simply connected domain, and let's look at what's the measure on SLEs, non-intersecting SLEs, one from Z1 to W1, one from Z2 to W2. This is a case where if you describe things in terms of probability measures, it's a little complicated to do it, but if you describe it in terms of these non-probability measures, it's actually very easy to say what this measure should be. First, this measure should be absolutely continuous with respect to just the product measure. So if I just choose independently one from each, so we just have to give it its Radon-Nikodym derivative. But how do we do this? Well, in order to select from this measure, what I do is I first choose gamma 1 using just the SLE measure UDZ1W1. So this is not the probability measure, it's the unnormalized measure. The finite measure of not a total mass 1. Once I've chosen gamma 1, then there's a domain which is what's below gamma 1. I'm calling that D1, given that. Now we choose gamma 2 by SLE in that smaller domain. And then the total mass of this measure is, well, what's the total mass? Well, I have to integrate with respect to all my choices of gamma 1, and then what's the total mass of this measure?
At this point, I'm slightly confused as to what role the partition function is playing. Why can't you do this calculation with the probability measure?
Because it's useful to be integrating with respect to, okay.
I understand that, but that's how you do the integral anyway, is multiplying and dividing by it.
Okay. This is the step that, okay, you could do it using probability measures, but you do need to have this quantity appear.
Yeah. But
which is a partition function. There's that partition function, which is given gamma 1, there's a certain probability of choosing gamma 1.
Mm-hmm.
But in the new measure, let's take the marginal distribution on gamma 1 in this measure.
Wouldn't you just do this naturally with the new probability measure on the new domain for the second half?
Okay.
Isn't that exactly what you do, or are you doing something different?
Okay. Well, let's see if I can. Okay. We're doing. Let's look at the marginal distribution of gamma 1 in this distribution. So here's the marginal. So I'm going to write that in terms of its Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to just the usual. So its Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to the usual measure is this. You can normalize this to be a probability measure or not, either way. That's good. Now this quantity is not, there's not a natural probability measure only way of describing that quantity. Given D1, what is the SLE measure of paths from Z2 to W2?
That's not the usual SLE measure in the new domain? Is that what I would want to do?
Well, no. If everything's a probability measure, that would be 1. What's the total mass? You have to see. In some sense, roughly speaking, but this is only roughly, you're trying to think of. You want to weight gamma 1 by the probability. In some sense, the way that gamma 2 is not going to hit it.
Right.
But for SLE, that's except in the cap equals a third case, that's not actually the right thing to be weighting.
If I know how to calculate the SLE measure, portal measure in any domain, why wouldn't I do what seems to be this set of steps? First, choose the path gamma 1, and then that defines me a new domain, and then I get the second path conditioned on the fact that it has to stay in that domain. And that seems to be more or less what you're doing here.
But that doesn't give you the marginal on gamma 1. That does give you the right conditional distribution on gamma 2, given gamma 1.
Right, but which is all I need in order to construct.
No, you also need to know the marginal on gamma 1. What's the probability that gamma 1 is chosen?
But it seems to be you can get both parts of it this way. So
there's another way of describing this thing in terms of loops. I mean, I could also another way I wanted to describe this, I would say, is what is the Radon-Nikodym derivative of the new measure with respect to the product measure? And in fact, one can give it in terms of loops. Basically, if we choose these two paths for this measure, then this one you can actually do using probability measures. This one you can't. If I choose C1, W1, C2, W2 according to the product measure, then the Radon-Nikodym derivative is actually the measure of the set of loops that intersect both of these things. But now that's very gamma 1, gamma 2 independent. Dependent. And of course, and it's again by the same sort of formula we had before. And again, C equals 0, which would be the self-supporting law case, kappa equals 8/3. This actually is just the indicator that don't intersect. So if it were the case of self-supporting walks, you could just think of the probability one intersecting without the other. Okay, I did define the Brownian loop measure. Okay, and that's because I have limited time. Well, last time I mentioned I didn't. I mentioned it earlier on defined. I already didn't define it, but I've already referred to it once. And then I thought I wasn't going to define it. This time I forgot to mention that I didn't define it. What about non-simply connected domains? Well, I mean, generally the problem with non-simply connected domains is that you have, if you split a non-simply connected domain, it's not conformally equivalent to what you started with. And basically, there's not a unique way to extend chordal SLE to non-simply connected domains. If you only require things like conformal invariants and locally like chordal SLE. And in fact, plenty of the partition function can be difficult, and different problems might give you different partition functions. I'll say for kappa equals 8/3, for self-supporting walk, C equals 0, there's a natural extension using the restriction property, which is just start with this domain without the holes, and just restrict to those that stay in this new domain. And that seems to be, well, for the scaling limit of self-supporting walk, that would be the right thing. For other kappas, you could do something similar using this thing, which I didn't define. Well, I'll just say that it's, in some cases, it's not obvious that's the right thing to be doing. But that's a possible measure. Right, yeah. Okay, then yeah. One other case that, I mean, one that you might do, one case that's been done is Laplacian B motion, which is basically, instead of looking at the harmonic, is to use the partition function, the Poisson kernel raised to the B power. The Poisson kernel, which is, or in this case, this is actually the boundary Poisson kernel, having walked from Z to W, makes perfectly good sense in non-simply connected domains. So there's no problem weighting by HDCW. And that this does give you the right thing for simply connected domains. So for simply connected, it's the same as SLE. For B equals 1, in fact, this does correspond to the scaling limit of loop arrays random walk, even in non-simply connected domains. But for other B, it's a process well defined, and one term that's been given is a random harmonic merger chain. But that's let's say for kappa equals 8/3, I'm not sure I've completely written a proof of this, but I'm 99.9% sure it's not the same as the restriction measure for cap equals 8 thirds. And it's probably not even symmetric in Z and W. Okay. This is probably a good place to stop, but before I do that, I want to say something. I'm going to apologize to everybody in this audience. I realized before, as I made this talk, I didn't credit anybody in this talk. So everybody here was treated equally. However, I want to say now, there are many people in this room who have contributed to many of these things in this talk, and I just haven't said, it was just so much to say like that. I've treated everybody equally, but there's a lot of you out there who should be given some credit in this talk.